All right, welcome to the Conversations with Podcast portion. Our guests today are Nick Goldsmith.
That's me. Sorry.
That's Nick and Garth Jennings. And they are the filmmakers behind Son of Rambo, which we just screened to an audience of laughing, crying, entertained young people. And it's a real pleasure to have you guys here. Now, Garth, you were the writer and director of the film, and Nick, you're the producer. And together, you guys have been working collaboratively for quite some time now, right?
Yes.
Hammer and Tongs.
Yeah, it's been. We met at art college doing graphic design 17 years ago, and it was a 3-year course. And since leaving college, we started making music videos, and we've been working together ever since until now. So yeah, it's quite
yeah,
a,
no, it's
quite
not
a
end
long,
now.
A long, yeah, yeah, that's it.
Until now.
That was
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
So you started off, you made movies, music videos for Blur and Beck and R.E.M. And how did you transition that into filmmaking, into feature filmmaking?
Well, we didn't just leave college and start doing videos for bands of that caliber. It was, we started doing loads of independent, a lot of dance stuff to start with, and then worked our way up. And then during all these years, sort of, how long was it doing videos, basically? So 8 years?
Before we did a film.
Yeah, about 8 years. I'm going to say 8 years.
8 years?
And then if I sounds good, you wouldn't know, would you? No one can check. So after, and by doing all of that, we sort of, that was our film school in a way. Not only was it our way to get used to the sort of technical stuff and tell little stories, because an awful lot of our videos had stories in, but we also accumulated, and I think most importantly, this crew and this sort of work ethic that worked for us. And we have this sort of team that we work with all the time. Hammer and Tongs was started as three of us. Dominic Leung, who's not actually part of the company anymore, but works with us, he edited this film. And we all started together. Mm. And that's it, really. We just had a little gang.
So the
and
kind
that
of
was easy to get that we just took the gang into filmmaking.
The kind of collaborative team we saw on screen there is a somewhat of a reflection of your experience.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it sounds really.
You mean like the kids?
It sounds really. It sounds really rubbish, but filmmaking is quite fun.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Is watching this movie. It seemed. Was it a lot of fun making it? It seems like
yeah,
just
it
must
was
have
amazing.
Been.
It was amazing.
It really was. We had a really small crew. I mean, but. The short of it, I guess, we made a film before this called Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was a big film.
And $50 million budget.
Yeah, big.
Lots
huge,
of stars and
everything in it, all of the nonsense that goes
puppets.
With it.
Puppets.
But it was great and a lot of fun, but we'd never made a film before. And so we went into that and everyone said, films are very different from music videos. You know, you can't do it like you do with music videos. So we believed people because we never made a film before. So the one thing that we took away from the experience on, well, we took away many things, but an important thing we took away on Hitchhikers was actually, we had learned how to do it. There's no real difference between making a music video and making a feature film, or making a short film and making a feature film. You're using a crew, cameras, you've got time constraints. It's all the things that you've learned. So when we came to make Son of Rambo, it gave us the confidence to go, okay, no, we do know what we're doing. So we had a really small crew, and that wasn't because of budget reasons. That was because we wanted everyone to be doing their job. And no, but it sounds
they know. No, you see, they know about the whole.
Yeah. You know, it sounds crazy, but it's like it doesn't sound crazy. It's normal.
Yeah,
it's like our lighting cameraman. People who start off in that job, a lot of them, I think, love operating the camera. And you get onto these big feature films, and suddenly you have to have a camera operator, and you have to have this, and you have to have that. Or so you're told. So it was just, it was really good for us because we were all doing stuff. Everyone was doing more than their own job. So everyone seemed to be enjoying it more.
There's a line in the film that got a huge response was when the kid yells, "We're losing light," or whatever, and all the filmmakers in the room
yeah,
were like,
"Oh,
I know."
It's a cheap joke, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry. We actually, we couldn't resist it though. That kid made us laugh whenever he did that. But yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about working with kids? Did you have special stunt kids for parts of it?
No, actually, I love the idea of a stunt kid organization.
What parent would approve of this?
I'm a Harry Potter. You know,
yeah. Because that's how Harry Potter talks in real life. I don't know if you know that. That's how Daniel Radcliffe actually speaks. But anyway, I don't know what I'm talking about.
We had small adults.
Small adults.
Small adults.
But they had big arms, so we had to digitally reduce the arms.
Really?
Yeah. Because you'd cut to him, you know, standing in front of a hose, you know, the water jet, and, you know, he'd have these huge great arms. So he'd have to digitally shrink the arms. He was the right height, but just the wrong proportions.
We should say that you guys have been in the States now for, 3 weeks, and this is your last day here, so.
Yeah, we've just done 10 cities in 3 weeks. So that, yes, that's why I'm clinging to the chair and drinking the water. Yeah. But what were we saying though? Why did we go on to that?
Working with kids was brilliant.
Yes, that was it.
Yeah. No, it really was. It took us 5 months to find the kids, which was the hard part. They never acted before, either of them. One of them had been a munchkin in a school play, The Wizard of Oz. That was about as far as it got.
That's true.
But they were incredible, and they made our jobs very easy. People say don't work with kids, but you know, we've been talking about this, and it's sort of like, actually, no, just work with the right ones, because the right ones are incredible. Because with the kids, you're not having to sit them down and say, okay, you know, they don't ask you, they don't go, right, what's my motivation in this scene? you just go, okay, right, you've got to start there, run over there, when you get to there, start crying and shout this. And they go, okay! And then they do it perfectly.
So, and that's not to take away from their natural ability to sort of be, you know, emotive in front of the camera in this very false environment. They just seem to be very good at make-believe. I think most normal kids just slip into that really easily, and they did. And all the technical stuff they picked up within 2 days. You know, but yeah, it was an absolute pleasure. So even when it came to crying or being, you know, the opposite of what normally a kid that age, you know, doesn't want to be seen, he wants to be taken seriously or wants to look good. They were totally at ease and comfortable with that. And also we helped to protect that by really the only actual physical thing we did in terms of that keeping that direction going was to get rid of any monitors or video playback. So we never throughout the shoot had any way of recording or watching it back, so that they never saw themselves and they never became self-conscious. And it was great for us as well, because we hate that whole thing of people rewinding and going, oh, I don't know, maybe he was a bit slow in the background. It's like, if you just got rid of it, everyone had to watch. And for a couple of days, there was a bit of a mutiny. People didn't like that. You know, how am I supposed to do my job if I can't...
The other actors?
No, the crew. They're like, how can I light? And we're like, well, just watch. And then it was brilliant. It's like Nick said, it sort of made everyone really focused. And that, again, was having these kids that were so innocent and sort of charming, and then having a crew that were sort of more empowered and on the case, meant that it was a very, very good fun shoot.
Now, the film has come out in England already, right?
Yes.
What was it like for these kids to see themselves on screen for the first time?
It was bizarre. I think the weirdest thing for them, though, was when the youngest one, Bill Milner, who plays Will Poulter, Will Proudfoot, geez, their names are so good. One's called Bill, one's called Will, and Bill plays Will, and anyway, it's a nightmare. But when the little one came out of his school a few weeks ago, the school bus pulls up, and there's a poster on the side of it with him. That freaked him out, I think.
It was his school bus that he had to get every day.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy.
It's like,
yeah. 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 Why my bus? He was like afterwards.
What was the budget for this film?
This one, £4.5 million. I've worked out it's better to say it in pounds, because we'd be just being completely and utterly dumb by the exchange rate. It was £4.5 million.
Excellent. Yeah, there's really...
Might as well have said that in, you know, Vogon money. I mean,
that's
one
great.
Knows what that is.
Current exchange rate is $9 million. At the time, it was $6.5 million. So now it's anywhere in between the two.
So you made the film at the right time. You made a profit already.
No, because we haven't been paid yet.
Oh, okay.
So suddenly all the money that we sold it for is worth not very much.
I guess that's not so good.
No.
Let's open up to questions
to get off my chest.
From the audience. Yeah. Anybody who just watched the movie, got a question in the back there.
Oh, wow, microphone.
Hello, thank you for
coming. This is a podcast. You got to do it by the book here.
Oh, groovy. Thank you for coming in. I love the movie. Big fan of Rambo. And this movie filled all my expectations. It was fantastic.
Thank you very much.
What did you do for the video effects? Did you shoot it on film and do something with it, or did you shoot it on tape?
No, we just shot it on... We were going to shoot it on an old VHS tape, but it was going to cause too many problems of breaking down. So we just shot it on an ordinary mini DV camera. And that we had an effect in flame that we just applied to it.
Good,
thank you. Boost, yes.
There are a lot of interesting special effects in the film. Comparing to Hitchhiker's Guide, that movie is kind of all effects, and this you have a great contrast because you really feel like a real world is going on, and then the cuts and the transitions into these magical worlds are tremendous. Can you talk a little bit about how you generated that style?
It was all given, the entire job of the stuff that was inside the kid's head, or his hand, rather.
All his drawings.
All of his drawings, any flip book, the toilet cubicle, anything, and any of the animation, whatever it was all one person. And his chap called David O'Reilly, who we'd met when we were doing The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, was one of the animators working on the guidebook. Very young chap, he's only about 20 years old, but he's brilliant. He's the best, one of the best illustrators and animators I've ever met. And he had to do, you know, all the Bible, but the thing we were saying the other day was when he presented us with this Bible after I don't know how many weeks of work, we said, it's brilliant, David, but you need to do two because we always have to have a backup. So he's like, oh, okay. And then had to do doubles of everything throughout the film, except for the toilet cubicle. But then, so he's done all that sort of stuff. And then he just took his style and did it in, turned it into animation. Originally, there was going to be more animation, a sort of title sequence, but it would have killed the surprise and the, you know, it would have just taken away from what happened later on.
Did you have any licensing issues with the with the actual Rambo?
We're still licensing the music. That been out in the UK for 3 weeks.
Yeah, we haven't cleared the museum, but we're working.
Don't tell anyone.
Seriously.
The First Blood clips that we use in the film were initially just a straight clip licensing deal where you just call up and you pay by the second. But then as things went on, the people who own the clips, rightly so, I guess, decided it was more than a clip licensing deal because our film relied on those clips a bit more than just being on the TV in the background. So it just became a more complicated negotiation than a straight clip licensing deal, and went on for 18 months. But you know,
it's
these
done
things
now.
Happen.
Yeah.
There was no. You weren't going to change it to Son of John McClane or
John McClane. No, no. You see, the trouble is, it's sort of one of those things that once you start, because we thought about that in the writing process before we'd even done Hitchhikers, but there's nothing like it. There wasn't another one like it. There's loads of action movie guys with big guns and they blow stuff up. But Rambo was brilliant. And it really was what had a profound effect on me as a kid. The whole thing was based on me watching it and then thinking it was so amazing at the age of 12 that I made my first action movie. And with my dad's video camera and all that sort of stuff. And it's hard to separate that actually happening, you know, and translate that onto Jean-Claude Van Damme or something. Because that film, First Blood, is brilliant. He's only got a stick and a knife.
It's really good.
It's a great film. It's true, isn't it? And he only kills one guy when he throws the rock at the helicopter and the man falls out. It's actually quite, it's almost a nice cuddly film in comparison to what, you know.
It's a great date movie.
Exactly. Yeah. It is now compared to the, you know, the sort of carnage. It became about the body count after that. And so, yeah, we loved it, and it was hard to separate that.
Any, we have more questions up here in the front?
About the process of...
Hold on one sec.
About the process of writing the script, how long it took you, if you workshop it with some framework or with friends, and about the French delegation, is it part of the original script, or you had to edit to get French money into the production?
We get asked that so much, and it's so bizarre. Shall I answer that bit first? Didier was in the script from the very, very beginning. It was, again, based on personal experiences all mashed together from the experiences with the French exchange program. And then
maybe that's why we got the French money.
Maybe that's why. They liked it. Yeah, it's true. So, no. And then we never workshopped it at all. But what we did... On the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, we met a wonderful script supervisor. And I only realised she was wonderful about halfway through the process, because at the beginning I was just ignoring everything she said about timings and all this sort of stuff. I was thinking, what? She doesn't have a clue. And she was absolutely right about everything. It was like having Nostradamus. So one of the first things we did after finishing Hitchhikers was pull out our old script, just slightly tart up the Son of Rambo draft, and sent it to her. And when she came back with her notes, we took them on board because we wanted to shoot something that we were going to get what we had on the page. That we weren't going to have to suffer later. And she was very good in advising us on that.
She was very good.
So that was the only really that outside influence, I suppose, that had a dramatic effect. And I can't remember what your first question was.
How long it took you to write
them?
It's difficult because we were we were making music videos the whole time that we were writing the script because we had to... that. Paid the bills,
commercials
yeah. And anything that would pay us. So we'd do some jobs and then get a couple of months where we could afford to write the script. Then we'd run out of money and have to do some more jobs. So, I mean,
we started it 8 years ago. Seriously, that's when we sat down almost exactly to the day when we sat down and thought this would be good. And then if we'd have known it was going to take 8 years, I don't think we'd have ever started that. But
the film is about 90 minutes exactly. How long was the script? And did
90
you,
pages.
90 pages?
Yeah. There's and nothing cut. Everything we shot is in the film. Yeah.
That's frustrating for everybody
else.
Oh, no,
there's one scene we cut. I'm sorry, there is one scene, but it was absolutely nothing. It was a tiny little insert of them having tea. And they don't say anything. They would, you know, why we shot it, I don't know. But anyway.
It looked nice.
It did look nice at the time. It looked a bit like Mike Lee could have done it. And I was feeling kind of glad about that. But no, got rid of that.
Do you think this film would be a lot different if you hadn't done Hitchhikers before it?
It's impossible to say, but I don't think so.
No, yeah, I agree.
I don't think so, because we'd written it beforehand, and it's no different from the script that we had beforehand. And we've actually went, like we were saying before, we sort of went back to how we were filming before Hitchhikers in order to make this, so...
I was just curious. I know you guys have. There's a. I mean, obviously, a huge subplot with the brethren and the religious aspect. I was wondering if that's from personal experience,
yeah.
And like also if you guys were worried about any like negative, you know, any fallout because of that or any controversy because of the religious subplots.
Okay. Well, first of all, the brethren community is sort of common throughout the UK, and I grew up for 25 years next to a brethren family. Literally, the house next door. Kids went to my school, and my wife's uncle teaches at an exclusive Brethren school, and so we knew all about them, or as much as we could know, because they really do keep themselves to themselves. You'll never go into the house, although they'll smile and wave, and we'll smile and wave back, and there's no animosity, but there's just a barrier. So that was where it was. That was what it was based on. As far as them coming back to us, they're not allowed to watch films, so it's
tough.
You know, if they say...
If you do, you're out.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you cheated. You saw it. Yeah, yeah. So who's the bad one? Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's an appalling answer. It's such a cheap joke. And again, podcast listeners, I'm sorry.
Cheap joke.
We're tired.
That they probably have lawyers.
Yeah, they probably have really good lawyers, really fast lawyers. Yeah, with roller skates on.
But I don't think we didn't set out to make a comment, and hopefully we haven't made a comment about the. And like Garth said, I think you've heard back from other teachers who have seen it at the Brethren school.
Yeah, we tried to be respectful. All it was for us was this is a family. It doesn't work for these guys, and we don't know where they're going to go. But we give the audience a rough idea of what's going to happen. You know, sort of a feeling as to where they're going. A positive. Move hopefully, but all the people that we were asking, you know, we're talking to and interviewing about this and finding out the details of the families and what goes on within their world, are very, very happy with it. They feel it's a very fair portrayal. A lot of people worried that have said, "Oh, but you know, the Joshua guy, he's a nasty piece of work." And they rightly said, "We never saw that. We just saw he was the wrong guy for the house. It wasn't that he was, you know, coming with the fire and the brimstone and the holy water. He was just a man trying to get his feet under the table, and he was the wrong man." So yes, we feel like we did all right. We balanced that, and like Nick said, we certainly didn't want to take a pot shot at anyone's religion.
Got a question in the back there.
I realize, I guess, music rights is a touchy subject, but I was wondering if you had come up with, in the screenwriting process, you had already decided what songs you were going to use and if you had specifically written them into your script. And then I was also kind of wondering about how you came up with the idea for the French character.
The every song that's in the film was written into the script. It was in there prior to Hitchhikers. So a long time ago, 2003, all those songs were laid out. Actually, only one we couldn't clear, that we used as an alternative, which was a Kraftwerk track called Tour de France, which is amazing, especially the middle bit, if you get it, it's brilliant. But we had to swap that for Depeche Mode, which was fine. It was like both as good as each other. So that was fine. And then Didier comes from just, you have a European exchange, right? And you get people coming in and out. And
not that cool, though.
No, well, you know what?
No one's that cool.
No, but in reality, I don't think any of the kids that got off that French exchange bus probably were that cool, but that's how I remember it being. You know, not quite as much as Didier is, because he's an amalgamation of several characters. But, you know, that whole idea of we're there in our grey, sort of, you know, God bless you, take care. You know, sort of like you're in your school uniforms and all that kind of thing. And they get off the bus and they're in these amazing, colourful outfits. And are they friends of yours at all? I don't know.
He had a see-through briefcase.
Yeah, I saw. You see it all on these tours, I tell you. It's just fantastic. Anyway. That's it. He was the epitome of the effect that they had on us. That all the guys seemed to have moustaches earlier than we did. The girls were more exotic. It really was, that was the sensation. Now, of course, it wasn't like that in reality. If we were to go back and actually see footage, it would not have been like that. But we were making a film about how we remember things rather than how they really were. Yeah. My pleasure.
Oh, what do you guys plan on doing next in terms of like feature films?
We're writing our next film at the moment, which is going to be animated. We don't know what style of animation yet. We're going to let the story hopefully guide us. But we're in the sort of outline stage at the moment. We haven't started the script. We're just trying to plot out the story.
Another 8 years?
Hopefully not. The good thing with this one. Seriously. The good thing is, with Son of Rambo started, it was just a feeling. We were like, right, we want to capture this feeling. And we didn't have a plot, so it took ages to get the script together. I don't think it's good to start without a plot. It's not. So with this one's got a plot at its start.
And a feeling.
And someone's financing it. So all these things are good so far. Yeah.
How do you guys develop an idea early on as a team?
I don't know, it depends what we're doing, really. We've not really, it's funny, we never talk about the way we're working with each other. We never even consider it. It's just we've known each other so long and worked together for so long, it all just comes together when we're talking and working. I don't really know if there's a beginning bit, chicken and egg kind of thing, I suppose.
Somebody says, hey Garth, hey Nick, let's do a movie.
Well, that rarely happens. It's normally just us to come out with the ideas between us and then trying
and
to
then
find...
begging people to,
yeah, begging.
To let us do a movie.
Yeah. We have,
Hey there.
Hello.
Jesus. I was just wondering if somewhere along those 8 years, whether you got just absolutely sick of the material and how you kept that sort of the flame for it going. And also whether after Hitchhikers, whether there was pressure for you to do another sort of big studio thing.
I don't think there was ever, I don't think we ever hated Son of Rambo. In the early days, before Hitchhikers, it went through at least four very different scripts. So one was quite Goonie-esque. It was the really big madcap adventures. But it didn't have the feeling and the heart that we were after. So then it became a very adult story. And that was wrong for us. We didn't want to do that. And then we tried something else. So it kept on changing. So I don't think we ever got bored with it. And when we made Hitchhikers, the only thing was coming back after Hitchhikers was actually just fear, as far as reading it. You know, just like, I hope it's still good. Because we from what we remembered, we loved it. And when we did read it, I think both of us were like, yes! Because it still energised us and we felt as excited about it as we did prior to Hitchhikers. So, we didn't, and in answer to the other question, it's because of that, any pressure to do anything big as far as following up with Hitchhikers didn't enter our minds because we were like, this is great and we have to make Son of Rambo. We don't really care whether people are saying, I mean, the problem was is no one gave us any money still to make Son of Rambo because we'd made a big Hollywood film, and you're sort of expected to do another big sci-fi film with puppets in it, which was the last thing that we wanted to do. We wanted to make this, but we were never pressured into doing something else. I mean, I do remember our agent and lawyer were a bit disappointed.
Yeah. Really? It was, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just, you sure? Why don't you have the weekend to think about it? No, we're sure. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They weren't happy.
When you look at this film, how do you see it being marketed to people? Because I think it's a little difficult to kind of pin it down.
Yeah.
this is the marketing right here.
Right here.
It is.
It's us going around
everybody
this country.
Everybody has to tell
everybody, go
all their friends.
The
well, it's true because it was the tricky bit about it. You know, you've got none of the things that you normally attach to marketing. There's no star or anything like that. But wherever we play it, it plays the same. And it plays very well in general. And the word of mouth is very good. So we've sort of been hand-delivering it, really, and taking it around, and that's the best we can do.
I mean, it's going to... Paramount Vantage are distributing it, and they're going to... It's opening next Friday, and we're opening against Iron Man, who's... Iron Man's playing in, I don't know, 3,000-plus screens. We're playing in 5.
They'll be full.
But hopefully,
right?
we'll fill those 5 screens
in LA and New York.
Yeah, 3 here, 2 in New York. But hopefully, we'll fill those 5 screens, and then everyone who goes to those 5 screens will tell everyone they know. So the following week, when we're in 50 screens, all 50 will be full. And if that can continue, for us, actually, that's a great way for the film to exist, because you know, we just feel it's a shame these days how films go so quickly from the cinemas. You have like a week, 2 weeks, and then you're booted out for the next big film. If we can just stay slowly, you know, creeping.
That's all we want to do.
Creeping.
Yeah. Like a virus.
Like a virus.
Right. Like a filthy man crawling across the floor. That'll be us.
Yeah. That's our marketing campaign.
Yes.
We're filthy men crawling across the floor.
With kids.
Yeah.
With kids in.
Is that not a good marketing campaign?
No, works for
that's
me.
Not a good. Maybe we have to rethink that. Yeah.
We have another question here.
You've already asked one.
Yeah, no, sorry. I like to hog the mic. And obviously, this is a very personal film for the two of you guys that you've worked on. I was just wondering, like, what the difference is that you felt, especially now as it's, you know, about to be U.S. release anyway, like versus Hitchhiker's Guide, which was, I don't know, maybe it was really personal for you guys, but probably less so than this one.
Well, it was very personal to us. I don't think we would have done it if we didn't feel like it was a labor of love. We can't do it otherwise. We find it too hard. If you don't love what you're doing, there's really no point for us doing it. And we loved The Hitchhiker's Guide and had a blast doing it. The way that film was released was very, very different to this. We did a few days of junkets, and the first day, I remember it was 67 television interviews. And I remember at the end of that thinking, who benefits from this? Surely this, you know, 4 questions and you're out. So this has been a different thing. This has been more like meeting people, talking to people like yourselves. And I don't know, I think the process, though it's quite tiring, it seems a little bit more... like it has an effect, a genuine effect, rather than just being stuff, just words, meaningless, yeah. Who knows, I might be proved wrong. Probably, yeah.
Do you have any other questions?
Ooh.
Which one is the hammer and which one's the tong?
The question is, which one is the hammer and which one's the tong?
Well, when we left college, like Garth said earlier, there were 3 of us. Myself, Garth, and this guy Dominic, and we were trying to come up with names. We were a directing trio, so we thought, you know, the idea of calling ourselves Goldsmith, Leung, and Jennings didn't seem very...
Sounds like a law firm.
Sounds like a law firm. We weren't going to get very far with that. So we had a list of about 1,000 names, and Hammer and Tongs was the only one the 3 of us didn't hate. So we thought we'd go with that. It's an English saying. When you go at something hammer and tongs, you go at it with all your might. It comes from the blacksmiths when they were shoe horses.
Yeah.
Slow. Take them out with the tongs, bang them with the hammer really quick. So it's a saying, and it just stuck. But no, no, neither of us are hammer or tongs.
It can be a terrible disappointment for people. They expect somebody quite snazzy to come through the door, but...
At least tongs would be snazzy. I don't know about hammer. Tongs,
yeah. Hammer could be.
I have a pair of hammer trousers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an. Can I just say that's an exclusive? Because not even I knew that.
Hell yeah.
Have you really?
Hell yeah.
All right. Hammer and tongs. I better find some tongs. Yeah.
Would you work on a script if it was brought to you, or do you think you're just going to write your own stuff, produce your own stuff?
Oh, what, write other people's scripts?
Well, direct other people's scripts.
Is
that a very different approach for you, getting into the material?
Well, we sort of did it. We did it with Hitchhikers, obviously. Right. But we haven't seen anything good since then.
Read or watched or?
We've seen great films, okay. But not not read any good scripts. But really, we're quite happy getting on with our own thing. That seems to be working. Mm.
Is it completely different working out of England than out of LA? How's the market?
Know. We've never lived here.
Right.
So we just take it for granted that, you know, our office is on a barge on the Regent's Canal that runs through London, and we go there every day and we just do our work there.
No one in the UK financed our film.
Oh yeah.
So maybe
there's money there.
No, there isn't.
Well, not. I mean, we didn't find it.
Yeah.
So
the Queen has everything.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I it's difficult to say. We love working out of England, but it's not because it's easier, I don't think. Mm. It's because it's our home.
It's true.
Well, that's a nice note to end on. I want to thank you guys so much for coming down
here. We're
going home
tomorrow.
Yes. Thanks, everyone. All right. Podcast over.